Hello.
Uncontrollable urge. Something that I cannot prevent myself from doing. I've been fighting it all day, and I'm going to do it. I can't help it. Against it all afternoon. Said to myself, Shepard, no. And something inside said, yeah. I'm weak. God, I'm weak. I may even do it again. Sorry. Who'll deliver me? I'm going to have to answer for many things. Imagine yourself arriving before St. Peter, which is bad news to begin with because you never believed in it. You get up there, see, and St. Peter's opening the book. He says, you're going to have to pay, friend. You're going to have to pay now for your crimes. What about this? He puts on a record player. Because why did you do that night? so well, it seemed right at the time, you know?
It's right at the time. Oh, how many men, how many? How many have gone to perdition for less than that? How many?
And so what can I do now?
See, well, you'll have to pay. And you reach in your pocket instinctively, looking for your American Express card. Says, we do not take them cards here. So you have nothing to say?
Well, seemed right, you know. I didn't think there was nothing wrong with it.
You're not telling the truth. You knew from the start.
Well, I didn't think anyone was listening.
We are always listening. All right, throughout all eternity, throughout endless eons, you will rise on the petard that you have created. You have forever to consider your sins. He looks down long and hard at you. And then he reaches over and he presses a silver button. And all throughout eternity, you and 17 million other sinners sit there with your kazoos forever going... That was a nice drama, wasn't it? Oh, man, I'll tell you. Life is not easy. Not easy at all. You know, speaking of bad news, I mean, did you hear about this guy over in Rahway the other day? There was one of these clothing companies in town. You hear these clothing companies constantly advertising on the radio. And, yeah, you know, that they're having a big sale down someplace, and they have this catalog that they want to send out to you on how to be elegant. Well, they got a request from a guy for the Back to Campus catalog, and he's in the Rahway State Pen. And I kind of like that. That kind of style there. And so, you know, everywhere you go, I mean, there's no question about it that the devil is nipping at your behind. I mean, always. Oh, yes. How many times have you ever had the just a little thing cross your mind? I'm going to ask you to just once be honest with yourself, and it ain't easy. You ever walk down the streets and you see somebody at a place or something? Now, that's a curious feeling. Have you ever had a feeling of seeing yourself robbing something? Have you ever? Not you, Marty. Of course not. It takes a man with a certain imagination. And it does. It really does. I'm serious. Now, it may be a perverted imagination, but it does take a certain imagination. A lot of people can't see themselves doing anything other than what they're always doing, which must be a blessed state of affairs. Have you ever had the evil thoughts like that? You're in the subway, see? And you see this fantastic chick walk in there, see, and you're all standing there hanging onto the strap. And then something says, hey, quack, pinch her. You ever had that happen to you? No. Well, gee, you know, you may be a human mole. I don't know. These are things that, you know, I'm just curious whether or not we will pay for thoughts. Does one have to, writhe in the river Styx for having thought a bad scene? Well, then we're all dead. There ain't nobody. I'm just... I ain't nobody. Oh, I mean, there's no way to fight it. I might as well confess here something. I personally once was inadvertently involved in a crime, and I was inadvertent. I'll just tell you exactly what happened, and you can believe me or not, but I'm just telling you. And if St. Peter's got the big hammer there, I'll have to tell him the same thing. It's a terrible thing to concede, but it happened. I'm walking along in a dime store, which is that place is a heavy one. If you're, if you're a kid especially, see, and I'm walking along in a dime store, and this dime store had two floors, and actually had a basement, too, so the second floor was where it had all this stuff, you know, the toys, model airplanes, and all that stuff, so I go up there, and I'm looking at the model airplanes. I was going to buy a model airplane is what I was going to do. They had a great model airplane department in this particular dime store when I was a kid. And I'm standing there looking at this great model, you know, and the lady comes over and says, "May I help you?" And I said, "Well, yeah, just a minute. I'm looking for my money and all." And I discovered that I did not have enough money for this model, which is a common problem. Well, with that, the lady walked away. See? And there was nobody around. Well, I put the model back. Yeah, I did. This is where you probably are not going to believe the story. I put the model back. I didn't buy it. I didn't steal the model. I never consciously really stolen anything. So I sort of was bugged, you know, and I walked around looking at stuff, and I only had about 26 cents or something in my pocket. And I walked down the stairs, and I walked around. I love dime stores. I happen to be really, a dime store is a place of forbidden pleasures. It's just, it really is. You can just go out of your bird. Now, I don't know whether many people discover this thing. I think there's two kinds. I think there are people who just never go in a dime store. Their life is, Tiffany'sville, either that or who knows what. But then there's us. And that doesn't mean that I can only afford dime stores. Don't assume that. There is something about a dime store that has a curious... Well, I don't know. It's even hard to put it in words. You can't really say that you want that. So it's just there. And there's a certain atmosphere. And if you notice that girls who work in dime stores, there's an unbelievable sensuality about them. I don't know what there is to that. Now, that may be all the whole thing. You know, it's all wrapped up in the whole thing. Well, I'm walking out of this dime store, a kid, see? And I go through the bottom. It's a Saturday morning. See, this is a great groovy dime store time. And it was the spring and everything. And I was, you know, I could feel the sap rising in the veins and stuff. And so I'm walking around the ground floor now. This is crowded with millions of people, see? So I'm just walking around this tremendous scene. Well, I get out of the store now. I've been there for like 2 hours, see? So it's about time. I was supposed to actually be taking an accordion lesson. Hey, morning, Earl. I was supposed to be taking an accordion lesson. Well, I wasn't, obviously. I was goofing off. And I get into the bus. I am about to go home when a lady across the aisle from me says, "Excuse me, sonny, but you have something that's hanging on your sweater. There's something on your sweater there. You're going to lose it." And I said, what? And I reached down, and on the elbow of my sweater is a thing hanging, and I look at it, and it's a card. I pull my elbow over and I take it off, see? What the card is a pair of earrings mounted on a card. Now, how they ever got on my elbow, I don't know. I guess walking around the store there, and I must have, you know, they have this jewelry department, and I'm standing there and a lot of people, and the next thing I know, I've got a pair of earrings hanging. Now, you know doggone well, at the age of 10, I'm not going to steal a pair of earrings. I didn't have that problem going. So I've got this pair of earrings. So, and they're like fake crystal. You know those crystal types? It's just a ball of crystal. So, I didn't know what to do. And it's a 25 cents on them. I had a pair of earrings. Well, what followed, I'm ashamed to confess. I would like to tell you that my great feeling of conscience and all the rest of it made me get out of this bus and take the next bus back and go to the lady in the jewelry department and give her... I didn't do this. I rode home on a bus and I hit him. I hit him in my corduroy knickers, see? And I got out the bus and I went home. It was about 3 blocks from the bus station there, and I go up on the front porch, and my mother is out on the front porch hanging a rug out. You know, she'd put the rug out on the porch railing there, and she'd been beating the rug, you know, and she's putting out stuff out there. She's airing out the pillows. And I walk up on the porch, and my mother says, "Oh, you're a little late." I said, "Yeah, yeah." She says, "Where were you?" "Well, I was shopping." "She's shopping? What'd you get?" You know, she wasn't even listening. "I got something for you." She says, "Oh, you did?" You know how a kid gets it. "You did?" I said, "Yeah." She says, "What did you get for me?" I said, "Why don't you guess?" "Ha ha." She says, "Oh, Fielder Smith?" "No." "Guess again." "Model airplane?" "Yeah, I sure want a model airplane." "No." "You're close." "Well, I can't guess. What did you get?" And I reaches into my corduroy knickers, and I pull out this earrings, which I had taken off the card, so it looks like it's $500 earrings, and I give her the earrings. She says, "Oh, how nice. Why, these are beautiful earrings. How nice. Why, aren't they? They'll go with my black dress. Why, they're beautiful earrings. Why, aren't you? You spent all of your allowance on me." "Yeah." "Why, isn't that nice? You shouldn't have done that. Why, that's just so nice. Did you spend your whole allowance on me?" "Yeah." "Well, that's wonderful. Now, I appreciate that, and to reward you for that, that was so nice, I'm going to give you another allowance."
"Oh."
And she takes this pocketbook she had and gives me a quarter, which was my weekly allowance. It was at that moment that I realized that I had been taught for years a totally untrue canard. At the end of every show that I always listened to the FBI in Peace and War. And this guy would come on.
L-A-V-A, the FBI in Peace and War. Once again, proves that crime does not pay. Bum, bum. Baloney. I doubled my allowance with one swell swoop, made myself the hero for at least 3 days at every supper, and it not only didn't cost me a dime, I was rolling in... Oh, did it bug my kid brother? Did I make points? Well... Now, that's, I just confess, that has never come out. And I might add that my mother actually wore those earrings. They were little, you know, fake crystal earrings. And my mother, every time she would go out, she'd say, "I'm putting Jeannie's earrings on." She'd put her earrings on, you know. I'd sit back. Oh, yeah. "Oh, of course I'll pay. Oh, no. I realize that now. I can just see it, you know, happening. I'm up there before St. Peter, see? And he looks down, and
He reaches over and he turns off his record player and all. Well, all right, he says. And now we have the subject of, he's ruffling through the pages. He says, do you recall, old penitent, do you recall a pair of earrings? Oh, I've got a lot to pay for. And you see, it isn't the earrings that I'll be paying for. Not at all. It's what happened after I got the earrings. That's what I'll pay for. And I could just see St. Peter looking down, your poor mother. Yeah. I wonder if my mother knows she's wearing hot ice. Oh, man, I'll tell you, since this is confession night, I'll have to concede something else. I just wonder how much crime in the 20th century is directly related to, caused by, abetted by, and involves the automobile. I mean, it must be staggering. Now, I'm not just talking about stealing cars. I mean, where would Dillinger have been without Hudson Terraplanes? I mean, you know, you can't rob a bank and then run down the street. I mean, that doesn't work very good. And it also doesn't work very good to, you know, run out and jump on a horse. I mean, you know, I can just see your horse. You know, he gets one of those bad moods, and the next thing you know, it's 40 years in the slam. You know, your horse wouldn't start. Well, I've seen guys do that. You know, whip the horse. By the way, I've seen have you ever seen... this would be something only in the business. I saw a beautiful film one time of a whole series of outtakes. A friend of mine who was a cameraman, a Hollywood cameraman. A whole series of color, beautiful, produced, colored outtakes of things that they cut out. He was working on these films out of Westerns that he was involved in. And there's one scene where I don't recall who it was. I think it was Gary Cooper, one of the big guys. And, of course, the bad guy, Jack Palance's mob, has just held up the National Bank and has shot Gene Pellett. You know, Gene Pellett was always the guy that got shot in these things. So Gene Pellett has been shot. And now Gary Cooper says, he went that way. Men, let's go. Let's cut him off at the pass. And they all jump on the horses. And with that, they all go, horses run like hell. And only one horse wouldn't go. And it's Gary Cooper's horse. And his horse won't go. He keeps hitting them. And the horse sits there. And finally, the horse turns around and gives him a bad look. That was it. That tore it. So there's that scene. Then they repeated it. See, they went out and they got another horse. The next scene was shot exactly in sequence. Now you see Gary Cooper hollering the same thing. You see Jack Palance and his mob, you know, cackling, and they go galloping off. And he says, "They went that away. Come, we've got to cut them over the pass." And with that, you see this crowd of guys jump on their horses. They start, you know, how they always go, start galloping like hell. With that, his horse goes sideways across the road. It's running side. You've seen horses do that. It's going sideways. And Cooper's going, hoof, hoof, and he's hitting it. Suddenly the horse just goes, whoop, up with the back end. Cooper slid right off and down on the ground. Cut. Well, there are thousands of those things. Cutaways. Wouldn't it be great if one could cut out the crummy stuff out of your life? Hey, can you imagine a reel of cutaways of your life showing stuff? Well, I'll tell you, I think the automobile is one of the reasons why we have, you know, crime has reached proportions in America. And in fact, any country where the automobile is very big, reach proportions that have never been reached in the history of... most people think it's because of the fall of morality and all this. But crime, which, by the way, reminds me, this is WOR, and we'll be, you know, fighting our way through this. I think crime, I think crime is a thing, see, which people will given the tools and given the opportunity, more people will do it. You follow what I'm saying here? And morality plays very little with it.
little part in it. I think a lot of moral people are those who've never been invited. I hear guys, you know, railing against the sexual mores that are slipping. And you look carefully, and you can see those guys have never had a chance any time, no matter what more. And they'd rather see nobody having any fun. So they just blow the whistle. There's a lot to this. So I think that the automobile has caused a lot of crime to come about, of all kinds. Now, I'm telling you, I'm confessing here tonight. Are you curious what my crime is? I'll confess. I had this buddy Flick, see? Well, we were about 16 at this time. As a matter of fact, we were. We both had driver's licenses. When getting a driver's license in the Midwest is a major thing. And it isn't so funny. I mean, a lot of people think, well, that's because they're slobs out there and they only believe in cars. Not so. That in the Midwest, of course, there's big spaces. And that meant you could go places and you could get out of the neighborhood. Here, you've got the subway. Any guy can jump on a subway here and in less than 8, 9, 10 hours, he can be at Coney Island. Well, it doesn't work like that out in the Midwest. If you're going to go, if you're going to go, 6 miles for a date, friend, that's an all-week operation to get there. So a car is a real important thing. So Flick, who had a job and was making dough in the summertime, got a car. And he got this old, battered, tired. It was an old Chrysler, a real battered old Chrysler. You know the kind of Chrysler with used to have an Indian on the front. Yeah, you know Chrysler. Yeah, Chrysler had a like a radiator cab. Had an Indian. You know, Pontiac had an Indian too. And anyway, this old it was a battered old car. It must have been about 15 years old, something like that. And he bought it for about $45. But it was a car, and that was fantastic. And he had his own car, and he got himself a did a terrible thing with it. He went out and he bought himself somewhere, or got a hold of it, a bucket of aluminum paint. Well, you know what aluminum paint is like. Well, this car was sort of mud colored when he got it. It was kind of mud colored, like blotted ink color, mud. You can see a little piece of. So he sanded it with sandpaper, actually sandpapered the whole thing, and then painted it with this aluminum paint. It was a silver car, and it looked terrible, but he thought it looked great, see? So it was his car. And another thing, it had no back seat in it. Somebody had stolen the back cushion out of it, and so we'd all squat in the back on the springs. another great thing about this car was the floorboards it had in it. You could see the street through the floorboards. And, yeah, you could see, you just sit in the front seat and look down, and you could see the street going by and the smoke coming up and all that. So, anyway, Flick had this great car. Well, the minute you get a car, this is what I meant about crime, a car does not operate on its own investment. It's like a horse. Getting a horse is a heck of a lot easier than keeping a horse, as many a person has found out. You know, you can buy a horse $200 or $300, and then you discover that the stable you put him in charges you $100 the first month, and he eats up 700 pounds of stuff with fur on it, and which comes at $40 a month. Then it turns out he gets the glunts, which means that his knee balls, his knees bulge out. You know, those balls they got on the knees, they have to lance those. And, if you've ever had anything to do with a horse, you know, friends, what it can be like. Well, so Flick got the car. See, getting a car was kind of great because in our life, all cars that we knew of were owned by official people like fathers. And that was great. You know, fathers take care of it all, right? Well, Flick got this car. And here it is. It's Saturday, just like now. See, he had the car from about Wednesday, and everybody's flipping, me and Schwartz and everybody, groovy, fantastic, having a car. Well, now here it is. It's about 9 o'clock Saturday night, and we're all sitting on Flick's porch looking and gazing and lovingly, admiringly at this old Chrysler sitting out there. Well, now, one thing that you must understand about Chryslers are large cars, no matter when they were built. And the larger the car, the more the gas they drink. This is a physical law.
There ain't no way to escape it. It's Newton's law, actually. The more mass you push, the more push you got to push the mass, right? Okay, we all understand it. Well, this was an obscure point to us at the time when Flick got his car. You see, the idea was that the bigger the car, the groovier the car. Well, of course, there's problems. You always pay, you know, you always pay. So here we're sitting in the gloom looking at Flick's magnificent Chrysler sitting out there gleaming with its aluminum paint. Schwartz says, let's go out for a ride. Let's go out and drive around East Chicago and holler at girls. Flick says, you got any money? And Schwartz says, what do you mean money? He says, I ain't got no gas. Schwartz says, gas? It's a, you know. And then he turns to me and says, hey, Shep, you got any money? I said, no. Well, now that is a maddening situation. If you don't have a car, one does not hunger after gas money. One has a car, it follows like night follows day. Gas money. Well, since all of us had stretched our credit at home considerably for some time, we sit on the porch there for a while, trying to figure this out. Flick says, why don't we call up Jack Morton, see if he's got any money. So everybody says, yeah. So they call up Morton, he ain't home. And it's a beautiful night, you know. Oh, that'll do it, too. I wonder how much crime has been perpetrated because of groovy weather and stuff. You know, the sap is rising. You begin to feel your oats and all the rest of it. So it's a great night. Warm and soft, and the Chrysler sitting down there gleaming in the twilight. It's got wheels. Wheels are meant to go around, man, not stand there, see? So Flick says, hey, I got an idea. Follow me. I said, where? He said, just follow me. We go down in the basement of Flick's house. Now, he lived in this frame house surrounded by bushes and stuff. And now it's the basementville. And it's dark down there. And we go skulking through the basement, me and Schwartz and Flick, and I figure, you know, I think he's got some gas or something stashed down there, see? He turns on the light in the coal bin. Well, on the back of the coal bin, they had converted in his house from coal to gas. And so they had a coal bin, which was left there. There were shelves in the coal bin. He says, here it is. And he's got a red can, you know, one of these big 5-gallon red cans, a gasoline can. And he starts struggling among all the junk on the shelf. He says, oh, wow, here it is. He's got a long piece of rubber tubing. Bum, ba-dum-bum. Now, at that point, I heard rumors of this process. Just like, you know, you hear rumors that golf balls explode. There are many kid rumors that are very prevalent. Like if you put your tongue on the third rail, it will stick there. They have to call a fire department. This is a big one. Another one. There are many kid rumors. One of them being, and one of the most prominent being, that if you lick an indelible pencil with your tongue, you will sicken and die. It is inevitably a cause of death. Your tongue gets purple and it's deadly poison. You've had that one, haven't you? This is a. I knew three kids that died of licking indelible pencils. I mean, it's a fact. There was many rumors of this type, and I had heard rumors of this particular operation, which I never put much credence in because it seemed to defy the laws of all physics that I knew, which wasn't very much. My laws of physics were if you jump out of a tree, you fall down. That's about it. See, so Flick says, "Okay," says you guys. I know how to get some gas. Come on, follow me. And he runs up the steps, this thing, see, with this long rubber tube, which was about 4 feet long, long, narrow tube, like the kind they use on hot water bottles and stuff. And he's got this big can. So now we're out in the backyard, and it's quiet and warm, and, you know, the control. And this is when, this is when hell plays loose. I mean, it runs, you can lose your morality very quickly. And Schwartz says, what are you going to do?
That flicks us.
What do you mean, what am I going to do? Can't you see what I'm going to do? You stoop. George says, what? He says, we're going to siphon some gas.
Schwartz says,
siphon? Yes, try to siphon you. Stoop.
It's at that moment that, it's like an alcoholic, the first instant that he hears that there's something other than Yoo-Hoo. At first, you're a little doubtful. You don't plunge right into it. So Schwartz says,
what do you do? What do you mean, siphon? He says, I'll show you. Follow me.
And so we go running through the backyards and across the alley. And across the alley, next to the garage in the dark, is Mr. Anderson's Plymouth. And Flick turns and says,
shh, be quiet now. Don't make a sound.
We go skulking along Mr. Anderson's Plymouth to the back of it, and Flick very carefully takes off the gas cap. And we're watching. We're all huddled around.
He says, hey, Shepard, watch. See if anybody's coming around. Okay.
And he starts feeding the hose down into the gas tank. Well, he gets it down there. He's just feeding it on. Now it's about 2 feet sticking out of the gas tank there. And he sticks the end of the hose into his mouth. I couldn't figure out what he was going to say. I had just heard rumors of this siphoning proposition. I had never actually seen it done. It's like, you know, you hear rumors of vampires and not many of you have ever actually seen one working, and I suppose a few of you have, but the first time you see one, you're kind of surprised, you know? So with that, Flick is crouched over next to the left rear wheel of the Plymouth, and he's got this tube stuck in his traps, and he goes... He's sucking away at it, see? And way down in the guts of the car, you can hear this gas tank... There's bubbles coming out of it.
Hey, keep an eye out.
And there's a quick heaving action. I can see Flick, you know, gasp. And something goes into the bushes. And he sticks the end of the hose very quickly into the gasoline can, the red can he's got. And I can smell gas. And you hear it going...
It's magic.
It comes right out of the car and right into the can. The Flick is scrunched down there and it's going... Two gallons, 3 gallons, 4 gallons. We got our can of gas now. Emptied Mr. Anderson's Plymouth of every last bit of its vital juices.
Flick says, where's the top? Hey, where's the top of the can? And George says, here.
Flick puts the top of the can on. He rolls up the hose, sticks it into his jacket, and we go skulking back like mad past the garage, over the alley, through the bushes, back through Flick's backyard, down the lawn. And now we're out on the street. And Flick takes the can of gas, and he opens up his gas tank, and... Oh, that's a heavenly sound. 5 gallons of rich, ripe Phillips 66 goes into the gas tank of the Chrysler. We throw the can in the back of the car with the rubber hose. We get into the car. Flick sticks the key into the thing. Always had battery problems. He said, you guys get up and push. Me and Schwartz push it downhill, and at the bottom of the hill, we are off for a night of scragging. Now, have any of you ever heard the phrase scragging? Scragging is a Midwestern term that relates to driving around like mad if you're male.
And every time you see girls walking along the street, you holler stuff like, "Hey, baby, wow, oh, wow, did you see that one? Hey, baby, wow, hey, wow, I'm going to take, huh?" And then you drive like mad on. You don't do anything. There's never any action. There's a lot of yelling. That's called scragging. Well, it was a fantastic night for scragging because it was early spring and they were all out. We drove all over East Chicago that night, burning up Mr. Anderson's Phillips 66 and scragging like hell, you know, and having a groovy time. That began a chain of criminal activities, which even at this point, some nights I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and I stared up at the ceiling and I realize that I'm going to pay. I can see St. Peter. I'm looking up, and he reaches down behind his big pearly desk, and he says, "Do you recognize this? Do you recognize this? And he's got a long rubber tube. And then he reaches down, and he picks out a 5-gallon can. Dead to rights. No way you can deny it. You know why? For one thing, once you've siphoned enough gas, you have perpetual, what they call octane halitosis. Your breath forever smells like Texaco. I mean, it's permanent. It puts your teeth with kerosene or something. Well, so once you do it first, I mean, it's a fact. Once you've committed your first atrocity, all other atrocities, they just sort of fall in line. After all, you know how it is. And so from that day on, every time we went, we gave up buying gas, by the way. We realized how foolish we had been up to this point. I mean, getting together the scratch to buy 2 gallons of gas. Oh, forget it. We could get the 10 gallons in, 15 minutes. All you got to do is have a tube with you. Well, that was fine for a while. Now, I'm going to tell you guys out there who I might be giving ideas to you. There is always other sides to the story. For example, one night, I'm going to just tell you, everything has its other side. One night, we used to trade off. One night it would be Flick's turn to get the gas, then Schwartz's turn, then my turn. And we were never breathed a word as to where we were getting this. We never mentioned it at Holmes. Well, one night, it's my turn. Got it? Well, I go creeping down the street with my can and my... You had to be very careful. Nobody could see you. You know, when you go walking down the street with a red can and a long tube, friends, it's just like walking down the street, with a submachine gun. They figure you're up to no good. So what we used to do in the twilight dark, we'd go up and down the alley, see, where they never would see you. Well, there was this car that was about 3 or 4 blocks away that was owned by the postman. His name was Mr. Taylor. Well, I go creeping into the backyard. There's his car. Open up the gas cap. Stick the hose down into this thing. Everything was proceeding as of normal to this point. And everything was, working good. Tube goes down. It's black. It's just stinging dark. I get my 5-gallon drum all set. I'm wearing my track shoes, ready to cut out, man, if there's any problems. I'm wearing my black jacket so I cannot be seen in the dark. This is important. I stick this tube in my trap, and I start sucking on it. Well, at first, I get nothing but air, I hear it way down in there. I hear... It was the first time it happened to me. It came up with a rush. Tremendous into my gut. It caught me completely off guard. I must have swallowed 1.5 gallons of the cheapest skunk cabbage gas I've ever run into in my life. There's good gas. I mean, you get so as you kind of like Shell. I don't mind Shell with a little vermouth in it even to this day, but man, I'm telling you, I got a slug of gasoline that must have been a good pint. I just, and I couldn't stop. I started to cough, trying to cough it up, and it went down. Well, anybody out there who knows anything about medicine knows what a good cocktail made out of 8 gallons for a dollar gas can do. I mean, a good 12 ounces, roughly about the size of a Coke bottle of gas, down in the gullet. Well, I continued to siphon, being innocent. I did not know, see, and I continued, I felt fine. See, I was siphoning away. I just, once in a while, I go, oop, there would be a strange bubble come up. And listen, I was having burps you wouldn't believe. I can you imagine what would have happened had I been a smoker? Boom! Well, I was, and so I didn't have that problem. Well, I'm siphoning the gas, and I finally get out about 4 gallons of this stuff, and I go running back down the alley, and up Flick's porch, and I say, I got it. Flick says, yeah, okay, let's go. Oh, wow. So we go tearing out to the Chrysler. We start pouring in. And I start pouring the gas. And, well, it must have been the smell of the gas that we were pouring now into the back of the Chrysler. Well, that gas had a fume. The fumes come up. It hit me, and I want to tell you, all of a sudden, there's purple and green and yellow light out going off in my head. And the next thing I knew, I'm in the bushes. And if you think you have ever felt nausea, friend, I was laying on the ground. It was paroxysms of heaving. Well, Flick and Schwartz immediately, they immediately realized this could be bad news. And there's no honor among thieves. You must understand this, that if you think you've got friends, friend, you don't have friends. When the sirens start whistling off in the distance and the guys start, diving through the windows, it's every man for himself. And that's exactly what happened. Flick and Schwartz realized instantly they got a bad one on their hands, especially when I started to heave up gas. Well, they jump in the car. Away they go. Well, I go staggering home. And I remember, they don't know anything about this at home. I go staggering up the front porch. I'm practically passed out. I collapse in the living room. My mother drags me into the john. And she says, "What's the matter? What happened? She's all worried." And I'm going, ooh. At this point, I can't even heave. I'm just going making funny sounds. Ooh. My mouth and everything is working involuntarily. Ooh. Well, I thought she was going to find out. I smelled like a human Zippo lighter. I want to tell you. It took me a good week to recover. I couldn't eat. Try keeping water down once you've drunk a half a gallon of gas. That's an exciting thing, too. Water and gas don't mix, you know. Well, I tell you, for a week, I'm barely recovering. But from that moment on, I began to be a professional at my chosen profession, which at that point was transferring fuel, is the way we referred it. I was in the fuel transfer business. Well, I, in fact, I got so good that I could tell the various grades of gasoline. Do you know that, for example, Esso has a distinctly, it has a different piquant taste to it than, say, Phillips does. And one of the most interesting gases, in case you're curious, is Amoco. Amoco is like an Alsatian wine. It's somewhat cheery, but yet at the same time, there's a basic somberness to it that is interesting as a change of pace. Amoco is a change of pace gas. But for regular, daily, year in and year out consumption, my favorite is Gulf. Year in and year out. It wears well. It's a good table gas. And so, sometimes when I drive into a gas station, even this day now, and the kid's back there, putting the gas in, I smell these raw fumes. I think that, I could smell it. You could tell, and I smell this, and I said, gee, it's not bad. They've added just a little touch of, a little sugar in the gas there, a little touch of, it's not been aged well. Aged gas, by the way, has a different aroma. Well, the final thing came. It was not finally. We did this for about a year. And I'll never forget one night. We went to a basketball game in the Chrysler. Well, naturally, we took the, we were
We went prepared, so for about 2 or 3 hours before the basketball game, me and Schwartz and Flake went out with our can and our tube, and we all ran around, and we got a nice, big, good load of gas. In fact, I would say we have probably 10 gallons now in the tank. Everything is cool. So before the game, we rode around and looked at chicks and yelled out of the windows and stuff, and we drove over to the basketball. The big civic center is a tremendous, tremendous parking lot, like Shea Stadium. And we parked our car way out in the boondocks, and we got out, and we went into the basketball game. Well, we sit in the game, and we're sitting there cheering, and everything's... You know, when you're a criminal, you get so that everything is sweeter. There's some funny thing about it. When you're working on the edge of legality, any guy who's ever had an extended affair with a chick knows that almost anything tastes sweeter at that point. It does. And the most silly things, you know, like walking across the street, waiting in line for your cleaners, it all has a certain tang to it because of the illegality involved. Well, we're sitting in this, obviously we're illegal, you know, we're sitting in this, in the gym there, a tremendous crowd, there's about 6,000 people yelling and hollering, and we've been, you know, we're on top of it, the old Chrysler's out there in the parking lot, everything's cool. Well, the game is over. It's been a brilliant double overtime game, and, you know, we're hoarse, we spent all our dough on hot dogs, and that we've done nothing but drink root beer and the popcorn, the whole bit. We're now spritzed down to about 3 cents each, period, forget it, Bill. Well, we go out of the Civic Center with the crowd, a tremendous, tremendous mob moving out. It is raining like hell. Oh, in the time that the ball game has been going on, it just started, it is coming down, I want to tell you. I mean, in sheets, it's not even coming down in drops, just tremendous. You know how it is sometimes. In the spring, you know, late spring, the winter, the water. And by the way, this was a big sectional game, big important game, you know, like final series and all that stuff. So there was a million people at this game, and a rain is pouring down. So, you know, we're kids, we don't worry about that. You know, we wander through the rain, the water's pouring down. We get into the Chrysler, and by this time, 26 million cars are moving out of the place, and they're driving all out. Everybody's back and forth, and the horns are going. And Flick sticks his key into the car, you know, he sticks it in there. It must be wet. Son of a gun. Hey, Schwartz, will you take that rag out of the glove compartment and go out and wipe off the wires? Huh? Come on, let's go. And so Schwartz runs out, and he raises the hood, you know, and he's wiping off the wires. And I'm running around, you know, trying to dry off the carburetor. And so we get the hood back down, and Flick says, okay, let's go. We tried to get that clunker going. It never occurred to us. By this time, the parking lot is absolutely empty. There is not anybody within 40 miles of us. The rain is coming on 16 million gallons a second. And finally, Flick says, I can't figure it out. He says, listen, Chip, would you go out and check the fuel pump? He said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll turn it over and see if anything's coming through the fuel pump. Maybe we lost a diaphragm in a fuel pump, which always happened in these clunkers. I said, okay. So I run out, and you pull the wire, you know, you pull the tube off the fuel pump, and you can feel whether you're getting any vacuum, see? So he goes, it's getting great vacuum, see? So I said, wait a minute. So I pull off the other one, nothing. No gas should come flying out of that, see? I said, hey, I think we must have some kind of a plug in the line back of the tank. And Flick says, okay. So I put the two tubes back on the fuel pump, and I run around the back of the car. I say, I'm going to check. The gas cap is gone. In fact, it is laying on the street.
Even then, it didn't hit me.
I said, hey, Flint, the gas cap fell off. Maybe some water got in a tank. It's worth check, will ya?
And I looked down in the tank, say, and I had this great little flashlight that was on my key ring that I got for my birthday from my Uncle Tom. See, now, Flint, that gas tank is... These guys siphoned even the flakes of rust out of the bottom. There ain't nothing in it. We have been skinned. And I holler out at Flick,
somebody, some rotten skunk, some son of a gun, siphoned the gas out. And Schwartz says, what? Which is no, oh, them rotten crumbs. Oh, no, siphoned the gas, what the heck is this? What kind of a place?
We're sitting in the front seat of the car now yelling, and Flick says,
if I ever got those guys that did that, I'd kill them. Siphoned the gas out. Boy, you can't trust nothing.
Gas siphoners have siphoned the gas tank of our car, which we have siphoned from another guy's car. Now, I'm not going to suggest that the car that we siphoned the gas from had siphoned it from somebody else. I can well have gone through 9 gas tanks. All I know is that we're sitting there and a cop comes up. And he said, what's the matter with you guys? The place is some rotten crumb siphoned my gas. Give me your name and address. We'll have to check on that. He says, you know, this is really getting to be bad in this neighborhood.
Which is, you're darn right. Darn right. It's terrible.